Welcome to Ballot Battleground Nevada. I'm your host, Ben Marjat, a reporter at KRNV News 4 in Reno. I'm passionate about making politics in this critical battleground state more digestible to the average voter and pushing past the talking points to press politicians for answers. On this show, we take deep dives into the people, ideas, and debates shaping Silver State politics. Primary season is well underway. If you haven't noticed, the campaign signs all over town are the ads in every commercial break. Believe it or not, the June primary is less than 2 months away. So we're starting our series of race previews this week. We won't be able to cover every important race, but we'll get to as many of the critical primaries as we can. We'll start with a race that will essentially be decided in June. Nevada Congressional District 2, represented by Republican Mark Amaday since 2011. It's a deep red district, so deep that not a single Democrat filed to run this year. A few minor party candidates and one nonpartisan are in the race, but for all intents and purposes, whoever wins the Republican primary will win the seat. This week, you'll hear from both candidates, the incumbent Amaday and the challenger Fred Simon. Before we get to those interviews, though, a quick update on the controversial USPS plan to reroute Northern Nevada mail through Sacramento. If you're not up to speed, pause this show now, go back and listen to Episode 8 with Nevada Secretary of State Cisco Aguilar. Postmaster Louis DeJoy was on Capitol Hill this week, answering questions from members of Congress about the Postal Service in general. Nevada Senator Jackie Rosen, though, used her time to grill DeJoy on the plan. She said it was unacceptable that the USPS didn't specifically analyze the impacts of this plan on veterans, seniors, and rural Nevadans. She also corrected him on the pronunciation of our state's name in a now viral moment. Take a listen.
If this information over a month ago.
Point in Nevada. Okay,
Nevada. Nevada, sir. Please say it correctly. It's Nevada.
If a veteran lives at a delivery point, our intention is to give him the mail in a timely service that we
You're
have
not giving him in the timely service now. So what makes you think it's going to go in 4 days? I hope to see the data by the end of the day, please.
We're investing significantly in the Reno facility to repurpose it for what we feel is the modern day need for postal service. The mail that we're moving, only 10% of it. We're only moving.
So you want to sacrifice 10% of my folks in rural Nevada?
I've got sacrifices.
I have rural Nevadans, veterans, and seniors that still rely on this. That 10%. If it's you're in the 10%, it's everything. So a standard contingency plan here, Mr. DeJoy, is not going to work. The extreme conditions in Sierra Nevada mountains require you to undertake an extensive analysis to ensure all Nevadans, even that 10%, get their mail on time.
As of now, the USPS still intends to make this change in January 2025 after the November election. Again, if you want to learn more about the Secretary of State's concerns for mail ballots under this proposal, go back and listen to Episode 8. Now to today's conversations with the GOP candidates for Congressional District 2, starting with Mark Amaday. I'm pleased now to be joined by Representative Mark Amaday of Congressional District 2 here in Northern Nevada. Representative Amaday, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for letting me come in.
Absolutely. Always good to have a sitting member of Congress here in the building for Ballot Battleground Nevada. So you're running for, I lose track at this point, fifth or sixth term.
Because I was elected in 2011 in a special election.
Yeah.
So okay. One special and however many, 12, 14, 16. 18, 20, 22. So six generals.
There we go.
And one special.
And so the U.S. House is notoriously a really fun place with no controversy or debates. I mean, why do you want to go back for another term?
Everybody agrees on everything. Well, this seat it's the only seat out of all of them in the Congress that is specifically focused on Northern Nevada. What I call original Nevada. It upsets the Vegas people when I say that. So anyhow, it's one of those things where that's a lot of responsibility in terms of the uniqueness that we have here. You know, not a lot of other districts have over 80% federal ownership. That's a special mission in terms of just making sure that our agriculture interests, our mining interests, our economic interests, all that stuff, is the focus of just this one seat. And so when you say, well, why are you doing this? Like, listen, the seat's going to change eventually. Nobody hangs around forever, and certainly that's not my goal. But at this point in time, when we've gained some seniority, I'm the number two guy of Republicans in the West behind Mike Simpson of Idaho in seniority. And so you've got the ability to be even more effective with that. For instance, we're trying to get C-130J models for the Guard so that their mission continues. And, you know, we're working on it on lands bills and other sort of stuff like that. And it feels like we're at the cusp on some of those things, as well as the continual oversight stuff. The mission continues, and I've been blessed with good health and still am excited and enthusiastic about doing it. So we'll see what the voters think.
Essentially, I hear what the argument you're making is that a new rookie member of Congress wouldn't have the sway that you would have to kind of influence certain bills and kind of get more money for Northern Nevada. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, that's part of it. But the other part, too, is when you have, through no fault of your own, the deep roots in this part of the state so that you know issues, that you've been part of them either at the state level or at the federal level, to where you can throw darts on solving those problems or getting somebody's attention in an oversight sense, things like that. And so the things which I think benefit the district in a unique way that nobody else brings to the table.
America's federal debt is now over $34 trillion and growing, and that's something that your challenger has criticized you for, voting to extend the debt ceiling in the past, or to raise the debt ceiling. Why did you take those votes?
Well, first of all, it's not just a quick, let's shut it down and bring them to their knees. I voted three times to shut it down, and guess who went to their knees? Nobody. And it didn't work out well. And so it's not like, well, I'm never going to do that again. But things you talk to now when you say, well, you shouldn't have raised the debt ceiling, or you shouldn't have voted for that appropriations bill, you go, okay, so what's the plan, folks? What are we going to get when we shut it down? And you know what? You didn't hear from your colleagues on the national level, well, here's the plan. Here's what we're going to get. Oh, and then the other part is, what's the plan for opening it up? Tremendously expensive things, very disruptive. And by the way, when you talk about this latest appropriations bill, which I've been criticized for supporting, it's like, really? That's how we pay the troops? You want to tell Private First Class Smith, by the way, stay on duty, but the check isn't going to be there on time. That's how we pay the Border Patrol. That's how we pay the support services for people who are on Medicare, Medicaid. Oh, by the way, Social Security. All of that stuff, and since we're talking about it, that's 75 cents of every dollar that we spend is Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and interest on the debt. So when you say, oh, you're spending on all this, that, and the other sort of thing, it's like, well, first of all, you have to ignore that the Senate exists, because some of the earmarks the Senate put in are things, obviously, that I don't support. But guess what? Chuck Schumer's in the majority there. And so, and by the way, the guy down the street of Pennsylvania Avenue, so it's like, it's 2-1. We're fighting the battle. But I'm fine with my votes in terms of making sure that we have cut domestic spending for the first time in 10 years. We've increased defense. We've increased the border funding. And so it's like, listen, it's not just a one-shot thing. You have to be familiar with the whole bill, and it's a value judgment. But, you know, shutting the government down has gotten nothing for us the last three times that we've done it.
Your opponent in the Republican primary says he supports ending all foreign aid. It sounds like you support foreign aid for example, Ukraine, as long as it comes with more border security funding. So there is a condition there. Where do you stand on that issue?
Well, listen, I know it makes a great talking point, but if you let Putin take over Ukraine, then guess what? You're sending a message to China. You're sending a message to North Korea. You're sending a message to the rest of the Middle East. This is a phenomenally dangerous time. And so, while I don't like sending money overseas, I'd sure as heck rather have the Ukrainians fighting Putin than us if that comes. And by the way, if you think we're an island, ask the people that still remember 9/11 that day. It's like, we're not an island. And by the way, ask the people who watched the Chinese balloon fly over most of the country before it went off the coast in South Carolina. So I'll just straight out, we don't have the luxury of pretending like the people who would do us harm overseas can never get a hold of us. And that's before you get into the whole cyber stuff.
So if that's so important, why tie it to border security funding if it is so critical to protect our interests in Russia and Ukraine?
Well, it's not tied to border security funding in a practical matter. I mean, I know that some folks want to lever that. And it's like, that's fine. We can lever that. But, you know, one of the things is the people who actually operate the Border Patrol is the executive branch. That's Joe Biden. That's the same administration that thumbed their nose at the Supreme Court on student loan forgiveness. And so when you sit there and send the money down and go, now we got to watch them, that's the other part of the mission, oversight. You got to watch them to make sure they actually do what they're supposed to with it. But here's the bottom line. Elections have consequences. We're going to have a chance in November to see what direction this country wants to continue to go. And as your reporting is going to reflect, it'll be interesting, because if you think that the way things are now with Schumer running it and Joe Biden in the White House, and don't forget, until 2 years ago, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and what. So it's like, you got to clean up that mess. We by all means need to as fast as we can, but we still got those other two folks in the mix there until the next election.
Do you, as your opponent does, support implementing a billionaire's tax and raising the corporate income tax to 20% for large corporations?
I'm willing to look at anything globally. You know, it's easy to say, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? The bottom line is, since you're judged on how you vote, and that's fine, I'm all for that, but look at the whole picture. So when you say, well, listen, should there be a billionaire's tax or whatever? It's like, I'm happy to look at that as part of an overall package. But as a one shot where let's go get those folks and ignore all the other sort of stuff, there's plenty of work to be done on the tax code and that sort of thing. But that also starts the argument of, is it more revenue or is it less spending? And typically it's, you need a blend of those sort of things. We've taken a step to reducing domestic spending in this last round. We're starting the new round, fiscal year 25 now. But the history is not great, because like, okay, we got a new source of revenue. It's gone instantly with the spending stuff. And so you have to, and oh, by the way, the IRS is collected more money last year than ever in history. So you sit there and you go, you know, when the budget was balanced with Bill Clinton in office, it was during the original dot-com stuff, there were tax revenues coming in like crazy. And so the economy and its health is a big part of how we balance the budget.
Do you support birthright citizenship? Your opponent does not. It's the right to be a citizen. If you were born on U.S. soil, it's in the 14th Amendment.
You know what? I haven't looked at it. There have been no bills coming up. So it's like, hey, we'd study the issue if we got a vote on it. But hasn't been on the top half of our radar screen.
Fred Simons, your opponent in this Republican primary, he has called you a liberal. How do you react to that?
Well, I guess when you're writing the story, you can write it however you want. We think our voting record speaks for itself. Voted for Jim Jordan 3 times for Speaker. Voted for 3 shutdowns, but they don't work. 95% Trump voting record. So all of that stuff is like, well, that's good if you're going to criticize somebody who's in, and you don't have what's going to make Northern Nevada greater, then I guess it's, you know, we did that 2 years ago in that primary campaign. Nevada demands better, Amade stinks, all that other sort of stuff. So it's like, well, we'll do it again and see where it turns out.
And last question, if President Trump is convicted of any number of counts, and, you know, there's multiple different cases that we could potentially have before the election, will you still support him in November?
Well, I'll see what's going on. I can tell you this. I would expect to, because from what I've seen in New York, what I've seen in the Florida raids compared to other stuff, I'm just extremely disappointed that the Department of Justice, the Attorney General and District Attorneys in Atlanta, and especially in New York, it's like I never thought I would see the judicial system totally politicized. That's not what they're supposed to be. And I sincerely believe, until somebody shows me something different, and what I've been watching in New York and what's been ignored on the other side of the fence, if you will, it's like this has been totally politicized, which I think, whether they thought it would happen or not, has strengthened the Trump campaign, because I think there's a bunch of people out there that think he's being witch hunted by the Democratic National Committee, whatever. And it's like, hey, this has never happened before ever. And I think it's strengthening his campaign. I can tell you this, unless somebody comes up in some sort of absolute, which is going to be hard to do at this point, reasonable, unassailable context to say that this is not all political, I would expect him to be elected.
But isn't it true, as a member of the party of law and order, Republicans like to say that they support that no one should be above the law, that if he did commit crimes, that he should be, as the rest of us would be, held accountable for those?
I agree with that statement, but that is not the fact when you say, what happened in New York? We got a judge. I mean, I look at that stuff and there is nothing regarding impartiality going on there. I'm sorry. I mean, you got people who campaigned on it to get elected. And then you've got whatever's going on down there in Atlanta, which I haven't followed every day. I got plenty of other stuff to do being Nevada's congressman. But I'm just looking at that stuff going, that does not make me proud to be a former assistant U.S. attorney and a prosecutor.
Take the DAs and the prosecutors out of it. If a jury of Americans, say it's people in Atlanta or New York or wherever, if a jury of Trump's peers convicts him, should that carry more weight?
You know what? You can't take the DAs, you can't take the prosecutors, you can't take the judges out of it. They are an integral part of the system. And so it's not a straight up thing where the judge just sits there and is a potted plant. And the DAs just sit there. It's like if they're playing first, last, and middle political games with the justice system, that's not our justice system. And I can say that as a member of it. So it sure doesn't feel like that to me right now, which is why there's been problems even with the FBI and the succession of folks in the leadership there. Maybe not the rank and file folks, but it's, you know, I've got this saying, everything that gets uber politicized gets destroyed. We're real close to destroying part of the justice system because of the political, fascination with one side of, we got to kill this guy no matter what. And it's, I'm not, fair question. It's like, guess what? Unless something changes, which I don't expect it to do between the election, that's not going to play a major role in who I'm going to support.
Gotcha. Representative Mark Amaday, we will leave it there for today. Thank you so much for coming by the studio today. We appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
Challenge to Amaday losing his seat is Fred Simon, a longtime trauma surgeon from Douglas County. He previously ran for Nevada governor in the Republican primary and ran for California's 52nd congressional district back in 2014. Let's hear now from Dr. Fred Simon. I am pleased now to be joined by Dr. Fred Simon. Thank you so much for being here at the News 4 studios today, Fred. We appreciate it.
Hey, this is my pleasure.
Great to have you. You ran for Nevada governor in the Republican primary last cycle. This cycle, you're in the Republican primary for Congressional District 2. How come you're challenging Mark Amaday in that Republican primary?
Well, I think that in this congressional district, conservatives need good representation. I think Mr. Amaday votes like a liberal Republican. His record speaks for itself. And I think the voters will see that there's a substantial difference between how Mr. Amaday votes and what my platform is. And so they'll have an alternative.
When you call him a liberal Republican, what votes specifically? What votes has he taken that you would classify him as a liberal?
He votes for every spending bill, every resolution. This is a huge problem for this country. We're exponentially increasing the debt. $1 trillion every 100 days. We're already at about $35 trillion with nothing to stop us. And you have to take a point in time where you say, I'm not going to support these type of things. There's lots of areas to cut. There's lots of areas to look at that are unnecessary. And I've never seen anything over the past 10 years where Mark Amaday stands up and he stands for the conservative values of less spending. And it's not in the interest of America to continue to do this. And we're going to leave a legacy to our children and grandchildren of a debt that they will never be able to pay.
Where would you start cutting? What would you do to, if elected, reverse the trend of this rising federal debt?
So there's a lot of areas to cut, and I would look at defense spending to start with because we continue to fund endless, costly, losing wars. I would not spend the $61 billion for Ukraine. we're significantly responsible for that war. I don't know how much you want to get into that. We could talk about that. But that money is going to be lost. That war is essentially lost. That war is all about NATO increasing the number of countries that belong to it. So it's all about. You got to know the history of this, and I don't think a lot of people get into the details. Putin has asked to join NATO several times. The United States has turned him down. There was a treaty on the table, which was brought through Turkey. Boris Johnson and the United States said, keep the war going. We're not going to win this war. There's 400,000 young men from Ukraine who have died, about 50,000 who've lost limbs. The Russians have plenty of ammo. 8-1 is what they're producing versus NATO and the United States.
And you don't think, as your opponent Mark Amadei does, that that's money well spent to try and stave off Putin's advances in Ukraine?
Putin would have never gone into that war if we wouldn't have gotten involved in the Ukraine. They were neutral. And the United States and NATO wanted to make Ukraine a NATO country. But there's no rational reason for that. You know, Russia has a GDP of $2.4 trillion. California has a GDP of 3.3. So let's get real rational here. I think these people are manipulating all of this. They're neocons. They believe in war, and Mark does too. The United States has a $25 trillion GDP with China 19. You're going to tell me a country with only a $2.4 trillion GDP is going to overtake Europe? It's just not. It's nonsensical. And there's no reason for the United States to be involved in endless, costly wars.
Going back to reducing the federal debt, and you talk about cuts to the Defense Department and cutting foreign aid and things like that, you support on the other end of the spectrum kind of raising revenues by implementing a billionaire's tax and raising the corporate income tax to 20%, according to your website. How come? And I think a lot of people would consider those, you know, policies that Democrats would support.
Well, I believe in the citizen, the American citizen. I believe in small business. I've had four different small businesses. Regulation, high costs for small business. 65% of employees are small business, are employed by a small business. The American public is paying a higher tax rate than corporations. You do, I do. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't seem fair to me. We subsidize tobacco, big ag, big pharma. What are we subsidizing big pharma for? The American public subsidizes corporations. That's where you're going to cut. Yes, they're not paying the same tax we are. And I will tell you, if they decide to go take companies and they're going to build plants in other parts of the world, the American public can stand up and not buy their products. You don't have anybody in Congress, let alone Mark Amadei, who votes for all of this, stand up and go, look, let's use our economic power as American citizens and tell these people no, no more. It should go down to the American public. We have a fentanyl crisis. We got a homeless crisis. We got an infrastructure crisis. And these corporations are making more money than they ever have in the history of America. And they're being subsidized by taxpayers. Makes no sense.
Switch gears a little bit. Your website says that you're opposed to, quote unquote, anchor baby citizenship. That's kind of a, some people say it's a disparaging term for children born in the U.S. to parents who are in the country illegally. It's birthright citizenship. It is in the 14th Amendment. And so to be sure, you support undoing the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship?
I don't think that really is what the 14th Amendment's about. You have birthright if you're a legal citizen. So basically, I've had a lot of experience with this. One of the places I practiced as a trauma surgeon, all three of my children were born, was Mercy Hospital down in San Diego. was Catholic Healthcare West, a hospital. It was the hospital 13 miles from the border where illegals came in and their children were born. The right of the 14th Amendment does not state for illegals, people who come across the border that don't come over the border legally. I don't have any problem with any citizen or potential citizen who comes across the border legally to have children. But no, that's not what the 14th Amendment's about.
Switching gears once again here, and ask the same question to Representative Amade, so I'll ask you as well. If President Trump is convicted of felony counts in one of the cases that may or may not go before the election, but if it is before the election, he's convicted, would you still support him?
100%. If President Trump doesn't get elected, we're not going to shut this border down, which is a huge problem. This influx, the Silk Road of China, which is the fentanyl freeway. I don't think that eliminates President Trump from being president of the United States. I don't think that the process that is going through by DOJ and all of these courts, in my opinion, has been done with prudence, reasonable. I think this is a political attack on this man. So I think it's illegitimate.
What if a jury of his peers, not the DOJ or prosecutors or district attorneys, a jury of Trump's peers finds him guilty? Would that change your stance or no?
No. So he has a judgment against him. I don't think that eliminates him from doing what he wants to do. There are plenty of people who have had judgments against them by juries. So as far as I'm concerned, he still has the right to run and be president of the United States if the American public decides to vote for him. And I will support him 100%.
Final question. Do you believe Joe Biden won the 2020 election fairly?
You know, when I look at all this, there's evidence in elections that go back decades. There's been cheating in every election. I personally
was not widespread fraud in 2020.
You know what? There hasn't been gross evidence of it, but I think there was cheating. And I think that we have not done due diligence as a government and opened up all of the states that were of question, and it hasn't been done properly. The answer is, I don't know. But I know there was cheating.
Dr. Fred Simon, thank you so much for coming by the studio today. We appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much.
A special thanks to Congressman Mark Amade and Dr. Fred Simon for coming on the pod this week. If you made it to the end of this episode, we really appreciate it. If you have guest ideas, episode ideas, questions, comments, compliments, concerns, anything at all, feel free to shoot us an email to bjmargiott, M-A-R-G-I-O-T-T, at sbgtv.com with Ballot Battleground Nevada in the subject line. And if you have a minute, I'd really appreciate it if you left a rating and a review. That helps the podcast show up higher in searches so more people can discover the show. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week.